aquifers and watersheds. Understanding our water resources. A production of the University of Wisconsin Water Resources Institute. Episode 2. Aquifers, websites, and water tables. In the previous episode, we learned from the master himself, Dr. Fred Madison, about how water works its way through the soil and becomes what we call groundwater. In this podcast, we're going deeper, down to the aquifers themselves. To help us along on this inquiry, I wanted to find another expert to guide us, and I knew just where to look. So I headed out to the Wisconsin Water Science Center in Middleton, where I hoped to catch Dr. David Krabbenhoft, a research scientist who is both an authority on water resources and a master of geology. I'm hoping by now that you may have developed some curiosity about the aquifers where you live. Well, you're going to want to keep listening, as David and I are going to share information on some really great websites where you can easily find out about the aquifers and watersheds in your area. But we need to start at the beginning, so here's some of my conversation with David. Okay, well, I'm at the Wisconsin Water Science Center, and I am lucky today. I have been able to grab David Krabbenhoft. He is a research scientist that's been working for many years in the Wisconsin area. He's going to talk about aquifers, in particular, how the people that do the work visualize aquifers and how they're able to do that in a reasonable manner, because aquifers can sometimes seem like a bit of a nebulous term.
Aquifers are a really important piece of the landscape for everybody. Whether you live here in Wisconsin, elsewhere in the United States, or any place in the world, because in most cases, the aquifer is what sustains the water availability for anybody or anything on the planet. The aquifers often are out of sight. We rarely get to see them. The only expression on the surface of an aquifer actually is what we call a spring. So when the surface intersects with the aquifer, we get that little flow of water that sometimes can be very dramatic, and other times can be just a little dribble of water. But if you can imagine that spring then extending back underground and extending over the whole surface of everywhere you can see, that's what an aquifer is. It's our supply of water coming from the subsurface. By scientific definition, an aquifer is any place below ground where you can actually extract water at a usable rate. So there's lots of places that you might be standing and thinking, well, there's an aquifer below me, and that's not necessarily true. The subsurface geology is not suitable for yielding water at a rate that's usable. So if it's not extractable, it is by definition not an aquifer. If you're standing above a very hard and unyielding granite material, such as, say, maybe near Wausau, Wisconsin, where we have the Wausau granite, it may not yield enough water to, in fact, be an aquifer. And so, technically, scientists refer to aquifers as any place you can put a well into the subsurface and actually withdraw water that's usable for humans.
How would you find out about aquifers? Let's say I'm in Montana and I want to know what the aquifers are in my area. Are there tools that people can go to?
The organization I work for, the U.S. Geological Survey, does mapping of the entire 50 United States where water resources actually are. We have a product that you can view online, or there's also print copy that can be looked at, called the Hydrologic Atlas of the United States. If you were in Montana, you could go to that region of that Hydrologic Atlas and look at what aquifers are actually present in that location. And I think that's also something that a lot of people don't understand, is that there's generally more than one aquifer at any particular location. There's an aquifer at the surface, commonly referred to as a surficial aquifer. It's not very deep. It'll usually extend from wherever the water table starts, which is usually within, I would say, 3 to 30 feet to the surface would be common, except if you get to the arid southwest where it's many hundreds of feet to the water table. But in areas that get more rain than the arid southwest, it's within about 3 to 30 feet of the surface. Then for maybe another 100 feet or so on average, there will be the unconsolidated surficial geologic materials that will be saturated from the water table down to some supporting bedrock surface that sustains that surficial aquifer. Beneath that point, however, then you start getting into situations where you have geologic bedrock units that, again, once you're below the water table, everything is saturated. And that's another concept that a lot of people don't realize, is that there's this thing we call the water table, and that's the point at which the rocks below you are saturated with water. So it's like taking a coffee can, filling it up with sand, and then taking a quart of water and pouring it into your coffee can, and about half of your sand would be saturated if you did that. The sand in between the sand grains would fill up. About half of the sand on the bottom would be saturated, and the sand above it isn't. Well, it's the same thing that happens out on the landscape, where that point it becomes saturated. That's what we call the water table, and everything below that is saturated with water. But again, whether or not you can actually get a usable amount of water out of those rocks below you determines whether it's an aquifer or not.
When you say water table, I get confused sometimes because we know tables are flat. Are water tables, are they flat like tables? Is that why they're called water tables, or what's going on there?
No, in fact, the water table follows the slope and undulation of the landscape actually very carefully. If you're standing on top of a local hill, you can be reasonably assured that the water table at that point is higher than the water table at the bottom of the hill. Now, it doesn't necessarily scale with the gain in height of the entire hill. So at the top of a typical undulating southern Wisconsin hill that might be 200 feet high, the water table underneath the top of the hill might be 10 feet or so higher than it is at the bottom of the valley, where you've lost a whole 200 feet in elevation on the land surface, but you only lose about 10 feet or so along the water table slope. So you can think of it as kind of a muted mirror reflection of the land surface. So it goes up and down just like the land surface does, but doesn't have the dramatic increase and decrease in elevation. So you're right, there is no flat water table, except if the landscape itself is very flat. So if you're in a very large flat plain, and a good example here in Wisconsin would be the Central Sand Plains. In fact, there, were it not for groundwater use and pumpage, which creates slopes on the water table, if we weren't utilizing water in those areas, the water table would reflect the very, very flat nature of the Central Sand Plains very precisely, and it would be an extremely flat surface. Other locations, the water table has the ups and downs that are reflected on the landscape.
Well, we'll be hearing from George Kraft later in the series about some of the issues affecting the Central Sands. I also want to point out that whereas David referred to the website as a product very formally and correctly, it's really cool, and you can find really fun maps. There are layers that you can use. I really got a kick out of it when I first went to it. It's nationalatlas.gov. There's different ones. There's a hydrological one. What's that one?
There's the Hydrologic Atlas. There you can learn a lot more than just aquifers. You can learn about your local streams. You can learn about your lakes, your wetlands. Everything that's part of the hydrologic cycle is in that Hydrologic Atlas that USGS has completed not that long ago, certainly in the last 10 years. So the information is very much up to date in that Hydrologic Atlas, and we encourage people to use it. It's not only a good information source, but it actually is very pleasing to the eye just to look at and ponder. And myself, as a trained scientist in the hydrologic sciences, I learn something new every time I look at that Hydrologic Atlas. There's places that I would love to go see, and it's a fascinating thing to study.
Just a couple of my favorites are the Streamer, where you can see all the different streams and zoom in and out of them. It's pretty trick. And then, of course, my favorite is Surf Your Watershed. All right, well, who can resist a chance to throw on some good surf music? As it turns out, this also happens to be a good moment to move on to the next podcast, where we're going to look a little more closely at watersheds and try to get a handle on that concept as well. We're moving fast, and I do hope you'll join us. This is Chris Bocast. Till next time. This recording was produced by Chris Bocast for the University of Wisconsin Water Resources Institute. Thanks for listening.